Welcome to Time Out with Taylor Brooks on the SNY.TV audio network. Before we get started, as always, we're going to let you know to subscribe to the show, Time Out with Taylor Brooks, by searching for the show on the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. And once you've subscribed, rate it and review it. I read them. I would like to know what you think. So please make sure you drop something for me in the comments. Today's guest on the show is Steve Smith. He has been somebody that I have always looked up to, both playing basketball and in the broadcast field. I met him first when I was working at the Big Ten Network. Of course, he went to Michigan State. I went to Illinois. His basketball teams have kind of been better than my basketball teams, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But he's just always been such a good, genuine person who is full of so much knowledge when it comes to basketball. And of course, he's a part of like that old school NBA. They played basketball a certain way. They think it's the best way to play basketball, and they probably won't stray from that a little bit. So he discussed that on the podcast, just kind of talking about how the game has changed, what players that he thinks has changed the game, and what he looks for when he is watching the games as a broadcaster. He talked about the differences that come with being a broadcaster versus being on the basketball court, and he had some compelling things to say about those two things. Of course, we talk about Magic Johnson, we talk Phil Jackson, we talk Charles Oakley, everything NBA happening right now we discuss, so please enjoy. And we welcome in Mr. Steve Smith onto the podcast. Now, before I say anything, I have to tell the story. So, Steve comes to World Trade, and he's downstairs talking to security. And they're like, okay, what's your name? He says, Steve Smith, we need your ID. Steve does not have an ID, which, because for some reason, guys never bring IDs anywhere. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I didn't know I needed an ID. I forgot. I was Russian.
Yeah, you're Russian. Now, luckily, the guy looks at him and goes, you look really familiar. He's like, okay, yeah, I played basketball. They let him in because they believed that you were Steve Smith.
Hopefully they wouldn't confuse me for Stephen A. Smith.
Exactly. No, honestly, how often does this happen that you're confused with either Stephen A. Smith or Steve Smith Sr., the football player?
I mean, both, a lot, especially on social media. Then there was a Steve Smith receiver that played for the Giants some time ago, so I kind of get it all walks, especially when Stephen A is on, maybe saying something a little bit crazy.
People he never does that.
Coming at me, so like, Steve, what'd you just say? And I wake up to it, and I'm like, what did I say last night? But it's not me. But common name, my parents, you know, didn't go out on the limb.
They didn't think about it.
They didn't go out on the limb. Steve Smith. That was very simple.
But it's really funny that there is so many in the sports medium, because I didn't even realize that. And then when I would tell people who's coming on the podcast, and I'd say, oh, Steve Smith, and they're like, which one?
You gotta say the tall Steve Smith.
Exactly. 6'8". The tall NBA Michigan State
old
Steve Smith.
Basketball player. Old.
Oh, not at all. You're like 21.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She's been so nice.
So, but that's actually a good question, because since you really had this longevity in your career, when you notice people come up to you, which one do they identify you with? Is it the Hawks? Is it Michigan State? Is it TNT? Like, what do you kind of identify yourself with?
You know, the great thing is, like you said, I've worn many different hats in basketball, especially starting off Michigan State career. And then getting a chance to play 14 years. And then at the time, 7 different teams had me going crazy. But now you look at it, then I get a chance to work for NBA TV, TNT, and also in March Madness. So kind of all three. Somebody have a kind of a conversation for all different three different genres.
And in your job, you are talking about each level that you played in, which is really nice to think about. You have an expertise in all of them.
You know, the great thing, Taylor, is I'm a basketball lifer. And then to get a chance, I still tell everybody I haven't had a real job yet to play professional basketball. And then get a chance to go right into broadcasting. And then my broadcasting career has taken me, you know, just around the world. I mean, from Big Ten Network to CBS, TNT, to NBA TV, CNN. So I've been blessed to get a chance to just be a lifer, talk basketball, and, you know, I'm still trying to prolong that, or I have to get a real job one day.
Good. I don't think you'll ever have to. So I think you're in a good position. So you mentioned, obviously, you played in the NBA for 14 years. And I may be wrong because the news may skew it a little bit, but it seems like that almost never happens now. I mean, every single time, like free agency or something like that, people are getting cut. Like maybe the average time of someone being in the NBA is like 3 years? 4 years?
Yeah, it is. I think, Taylor, unfortunately, you know, people don't get a chance to see some of those guys that You know, I was lucky. I got a chance to play 14 years, but there's guys that's in and out, 10-day contracts. They're down in the D League, trying to fight for their dreams. They're overseas. And then you have some guys that's spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at Dirk Nowitzki and Kobe Bryant, 20 years playing in the NBA for one franchise, Kevin Garnett. So it's just a level of different type of luck, skill level. Some guys can catch on, style of play. But the good thing is a lot of guys are trying to reach that goal, that dream, because it's an unbelievable dream to get a chance to even play one game in the NBA.
Right. But has that skewed maybe with the time? Like, back when you were playing, was it like that? Someone was in, someone was out? Or did you see guys having longer careers?
Yeah, they had long careers. I think back in my day, the longevity with one franchise.
Right.
You know, now a guy, because of free agency, doesn't last as long. You don't sign as longer contracts.
Mm-hmm.
The city's kind of grabbed you, and you maybe got traded once or twice.
Yeah.
But as my era now, it's starting to get a chance where guys are moving around a lot. I think because of the new collective bargaining, guys mm-hmm. signing these massive contracts, I don't think there'll be a lot of movement in the next 2 or 3 years from superstars.
Yeah, oh, those superstars. Okay, question. What do you say to the fans maybe say, okay, these guys are overpaid?
No, not at all. I think the one thing is, you know, obviously you look at the massive numbers, but I always say employer's not going to pay you more than what he makes.
Exactly. You're paid what the market allows.
And then also mm-hmm. you see the value of franchise. Just to give you, just in my career, 1988, I was drafted in 1991. The Miami Heat, they paid $33 million for the franchise. And that's in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
I was drafted in 1991, doing my homework when I was getting drafted. I mean, it's over a $1 billion franchise now.
Yeah.
And you're just talking, what, some 30-something years. So don't feel bad for the owners. They're doing all right.
They're doing okay, for sure. And, you know, I have read the book $40 Million Slaves, like, mm-hmm. 5 times. I love everything Rodin writes. But they touch on it a lot there where, you know, it's very rare that you even hear someone say the owners are the ones getting overpaid when it's the players that make the product. They're the players are the ones that get everything done, but they get the stigma of you're just going out there and putting the ball in the hoop. It's like, well, what's the owner doing that's more important than what I'm doing?
Well, you know, I kind of correlate it to when you look at ticket prices. Ticket prices are going to all-time sky high, especially suites. And I think that's where the money is driven. And then TV revenue. You look at the TV deal the NBA has just signed, NFL has signed. There are billion-dollar deals.
Yeah.
And so I think players are getting their fair share of the market along with owners. I think everybody's happy, especially in the NBA. I think everybody's making money right now.
I would say so. I think I should have been an NBA player. I picked the wrong
career. Still got a chance.
Yeah. Hey, it's never too late. I think I'd be a point guard, a pretty good point guard.
I don't know, Taylor. I think you'd be a shooter.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't think you'd pass the ball at all.
I mean, I have a nice little jump shot.
I don't think you want no part of the paint, though.
I got to work on, like, my Euro step. I've always been like, that's the one thing I wish I had, just, like, a smooth Euro. I wish I could play basketball just in general. But, like, when you see someone with a nice Euro step, I'm like...
So I'm going to ask you a question.
Oh, gosh, okay.
If you could be, well, pattern your game,
okay.
Who would be the one player in the NBA right now that you think you would be, your game would be similar?
Very good question. Can it be a person that's not in the NBA anymore?
Yeah, it can.
Allen Iverson. He's my background. I love AI. I want to play like AI. He's probably the person that's closest to, like, my size. But, I mean... I love Allen Iverson. I have probably watched every documentary on it. By the way, you did the NBA TV one, and it was amazing. Like, What was it like doing that?
You know what's so crazy is just having relationships. I was there at All-Star having media day, and AI was walking for his Hall of Fame induction luncheon. They were getting a chance to announce the Hall of Famers. And we've been trying to get a sit-down. Well, a lot of people have been trying to get a sit-down for
him. Yeah, he never does it.
I live in Atlanta. So I see him in Atlanta.
Woo woo, Georgia.
Walking past, and they were asking him, you know, AI, when are you going to do the interview? And he's like, I want to do it. If I do it, I'm going to do it with Smitty. And so, matter of fact, I was doing media day, and he was like, matter of fact, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it now.
Stop.
So, really challenged me. You know, and obviously, you want to be challenged in your career. You know, obviously, in basketball, it's totally different. But as a broadcaster, to do an AI interview just on the whim.
Yeah.
No questions, no prepared. So, we cut my media day. They gave me about 15 minutes to prepare. It came out and it turned out to be a 30-minute show, which I thought it turned out to be pretty good. I wish I had a couple more questions that I just couldn't rattle off, but we just had a conversation. I think that's the one thing about doing broadcasts. And if you have a relationship and it's more of a, not a Q&A, just the conversation, it comes off a little bit more genuine.
I completely agree. So walk me through that. So you realize you have to do AI. you got to think of questions. What are the first things you're saying, okay, I want to know this, I have to ask this, this is going to be compelling for people to hear?
Well, I think the first thing was just to take me back to high school and then Georgetown. And I was trying to put all my questions together in my mind, just to, let's start off with high school. And obviously all he went through in high school. And the one thing is I learned a lot. He said he was getting recruited by everybody for football and basketball.
Yeah. He went to Bethel, correct?
In Virginia, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think he went to Bethel. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I think you know more of me since you watched all the documents.
Yeah, I'm like, he went to Bethel.
I mean, obviously, we, you know, well documented the, you know, the situation he had. He said nobody recruited him anymore. One big-time school took a chance in John Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom asked John Thompson to take a chance on her baby, and it turned out unbelievable. So just to go through from high school to Georgetown, and obviously through his NBA career, then afterwards, it was just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and you really got a lot of information out of him in that, and that's the thing, like the 30 for 30 that ESPN did was good, but it couldn't reach a certain point because he wasn't in it. And it's hard to tell somebody's story if they're not telling their story. So the thing that made the NBA TV one so compelling is finally we're hearing from Allen Iverson, because every documentary about Allen Iverson hasn't had Allen Iverson in it.
Yes.
You know, so just to have him there as a focal point and really hearing all the things that he thought just really set it over the edge for me.
And I think just Amar Rashad, Ernie Johnson, the two of the guys that have kind of mentored me in doing those sit-down interviews, and they, one thing they said, just listen.
Steve, yeah.
And look at his response and reactions to some of the questions. So he kind of just took over. He started asking me questions. We just started talking. My producer was like, wrap it up, ask this. But I think more importantly, you know, that's the one thing as myself, I had to tell my producer, let's wait. Let him just talk.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great. I mean, my other sit down with LeBron James, I had one with Vince Carter. So those have been fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you, AI, so you got to get the braids.
Love AI. I need cornrows. Yes, I need a mink. You know, you can't be AI without the mink. You have to do it all. I got to put on a mink, do a press conference, and then I'll officially be AI. Got to get a mean crossover, too.
Yeah, you do. You do.
I don't know what I like better, Eurostep or crossover.
You know, they're both interesting. I would probably go with the crossover.
Okay.
Because I have
a
little bit more history going all the way back to Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Hardaway.
Yeah.
Allen Iverson. It's totally different versions of the crossover, so I would go with the crossover over the Eurostep.
Because I almost think people have spiced up the Eurostep now, like you equate it with Manu, who probably needs to have like a patent on the Eurostep, or James Harden. It's like, which one is prettier? Because I go back and forth on that.
They're totally different.
Yeah.
You know, Manu's was real hard, the first step, the plant, and then the other direction. James Harden is kind of this methodical plant. See what you're going to do. He might play backwards. He might play sideways. So he kind of is a counter Manu. He's waiting for you to make a mistake. And Manu is trying to just set you up leaning one way. Both unbelievable. But the first guy that I saw, I guess, I was guarding with Sarunas Marcellunas back in the day.
Yes.
He was the first guy with the hard Eurostep.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'll get it done. Maybe I need to like go to Europe and really learn it and then come back. Okay. So let's talk about you on the court for a bit. I was reading something, and John Starks said that you were one of the hardest people to defend.
I appreciate from John Starks. I appreciate it. I think that was in Slam Magazine.
Yeah.
He named me, Michael Jordan, Reggie Miller.
That's pretty good company.
You know, we were back then. I look at it now. That's the evolution of the game has changed. At 6'8", I would be a center now. Power forward for sure.
Right.
Draymond Green, 6'6", 6'7", playing power forward. I came in the league as a 6'8", point guard. All I want to be like Magic Johnson from Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I moved to the two guard because Mookie Blaylock couldn't beat him out when I got traded. So good to have the versatility in my game. But me and John Starks had some battles. And one thing I loved about back then, very physical in the 90s. And then the one thing is we always
hand checking,
post up. That's I love that you brought that up. Hand checking was allowed.
Exactly.
It was mastered by a lot of guys, especially the Knicks. They had this level of they're going to hand check you,
mm-hmm.
and then if you beat one of those guys, then they had Mason, Oakley, and Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing just to hard foul you. So different type of basketball, more of a football style back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And obviously the game has opened up now.
Mm-hmm. How do you think, just kind of speaking of the Knicks, that style has changed for them? Because, you know, it's especially right now they're having a bit of a down year, and you don't really see that aggressive play out of them now.
Well, you don't see it pretty much with nobody in the league.
Right.
From my era, you start looking at the rule changes, and I think that's what's changed to pace and space of basketball right now. I mean, we had hand checking, then they took that away. Then you had arm bar, then they took that away. I don't know how I would be able to guard Michael Jordan, but I could touch right now. And I think that's why you see the explosion of numbers and stats from guys like James Harden, Russell Westbrook. Take nothing away from them.
Right.
But they're so talented, and you can't put a hand on them.
So how do you do it? How you stop them?
So it has to be team defense, and I think that's the one thing is, that's the only thing you can do is team defenders. And guys got to be a little bit more agile now as far as being able to lateral movement. Back in the day, you just had to be strong and physical, and you could guard people. And so now as you see, and then four and fives are behind the line, where four and fives are in the paint, so it made it congested. Now everything is opened up, pace and space.
So when people say, you know, the game has changed, like, try doing that back then, and, you know, all us millennials are like, stop, you just don't know what you're talking about, you're old. You feel like there is some credence to that. Like, the game literally has changed because you can't defend people the same way. You can't do a lot of the same things, or you used to be able to do things that you can't now, or can do things now that you couldn't back then. So it's just fundamentally different.
It has freedom of movement. That's definitely there. We have flagrant ones, flagrant two. Mm-hmm. We had either it was a hard foul, you get up, or ejection and a fight.
Dust yourself off, throw some hands.
Yes.
Closest you've been to just really getting in a fight on the court?
I would tell you, and it's the guy from your alma mater. And we were close. I wouldn't say on the court, Kendall Gill. And we're good friends.
Good me old Kendall.
Kendall, it was Dikembe Mutombo. I think he threw an elbow and broke Jason Williams at the Nets. That Jason Williams, big Jason Williams, I would guess describe him, broke his nose. And we had a little, you know, talking going back and forth. And me and Kendall, Big Ten, Chicago, Detroit knew each other. And then back in the tunnel, so that's where we did our damage, back in the tunnel, so you couldn't get fined. we got into it, and we had a nice little skirmish. And, you know, Kendall's a boxer, martial arts.
He is. Still boxes now, I always see him posted about it.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I took one from him, and then after that, you know, your instinct is, let me hold, and we wrestled to the floor. The good thing is, we work on NBA TV. Mm-hmm. We've got a chance to laugh about it, but...
Yeah, and two people that went into that broadcasting avenue. Yeah, he did that for a bit.
It happened a lot. I mean, Oakley and I got into it. Then we were best of friends. I think more back then, you got into it on the court, but you just left it on the court. Mm-hmm. And you were friends, you know, afterwards. We still laugh about it.
Right, and I know Oakley is a good friend of yours. And I was actually at the NBA TV studios when all the Knicks stuff happened. He was thrown out the Garden, and you guys were discussing it just... Now that has progressed a bit, obviously Adam Silver has gotten involved, MJ's gotten involved. Just what's your view on that entire situation, and do you think that they can find some type of compromise?
Well, I know Adam, Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. Dolan, and also Charles Oakley had a meeting. And when they came out of that, I guess, you know, Oakley's allowed to go back to the Garden. I don't
Thankfully.
Know he hasn't attended, but I think if you go back, this could all be avoided. And I think, one, both from Charles Oakley and Dolan, but I think for Dolan, I mean, I think as an owner, you know, obviously you can handle that situation much better, because there are certain players that you attach to cities. New Yorkers love Charles Oakley.
Yes.
And I think that's where it could have been avoided. I know they had some things in the past, but it just could have sat down just like they did afterwards and could have avoided it.
Yeah, I agree. And it was crazy just like how Twitter erupted that day. Like, the fans could not believe that Charles Oakley was dragged out of the Garden and all this stuff going on. So I really do hope that they can find some type of common ground with that, because right now I think the Knicks, first off, need all the good PR they can get. But then also, just, you want to have a good relationship with people that have brought so many good memories, I mean, to the Garden. You don't want to damage that in any way.
And I think social media, I mean,
as
soon as it happened and people went on Facebook Live, Instagram Live, you'll watch it. And I would say for these athletes in this day, we had the media, but they were kind of, once we got into the locker room, once we got home, we had our personal space.
Oh, no more of that.
Now, the media is in the huddle. The media now, because of social media, they are at practice. They are in games. I remember when social media first came out, Charlie Villanueva was tweeting out his stats or talking to people at halftime, which he kind of got in trouble. And I didn't play with that dynamic, but that had to be. You talk about your privacy being taken away just as an athlete and a celebrity, but now with social media, that has to be hard for these guys.
So how conscious are you of that? Being like, okay, I know what it's like to be on the court, but now I'm kind of a media member. Like, are you thinking about that constantly when you're doing your job?
Yeah, I am. And I think the one thing is fact checking. I yeah. hate running to social media. And
you don't do alternative facts?
No, not at all. I think that's the one thing is you got to have great sources and friends to talk to, but just to run for the first thing to come out on social media, you know, I'd rather get it right than be first. You know what I mean? I'd rather be last and get it right versus just kind of jump out there and being the first one and get it all wrong.
Tell me one player in the NBA right now that you think has really changed the game.
You know, I think we've seen LeBron James, the evolution of a guy 6'8", 260, playing the way he played. My equivalent to LeBron James was Karl Malone.
Okay.
That big, 6'8", 6'9", 260, 270. But Karl was a power forward. LeBron James is basically a point forward with that type of athleticism and that type
of ridiculous
power. Yeah. But I think now the next evolution is Kevin Durant is a 7-footer. That's playing basically the 2 or the 3. And then you have Porzingis, the next level.
Yeah.
I got a chance to stand next to him at All-Star Game. He's 7'3". And could be playing the 2 or the 3. It doesn't look like he'll ever be a center. I mean, obviously a lineup at center, but his skill set is more 2-3.
And to have a big guy win the skills challenge, that's supposed to be for the guards.
2 years in a row.
Yeah, that is supposed to be for the guards, and he's
taking over.
I'm a
little upset at our guards right now. You know, it's changed now. Centers are shooting the technical fouls. Every time it was a tech, I wish Dikembe Mutombo would have walked up there. We like, get out of the way, but bigs now are shooting the.
Yeah.
The tags bigs are shooting threes. Mm-hmm. Bigs are winning the skills challenge. They're handling the basketball. And that's why I love the nickname. I guess they tag Porzingis as a unicorn because he's totally something that's totally different.
He can do everything.
Yes.
It's funny, though, because usually when you ask somebody that, they say Steph Curry.
Yes.
Just off the bat, they're like, Steph, that's the guy. But do you think that Steph has really changed the entire like NBA or more so how teams will defend like having all these weapons in – because for me, it's like Porzingis has changed maybe the type of player that we'll be looking for.
Right.
You know?
Steph has taken what the NBA was trying to get to.
Yeah.
As far as like we talk about pace and space. There are shots I look at Steph take now. It's a 35-footer.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, that's a good shot. And the analytics say it's a good shot. I'm so old school. I'm trying to see where a 3-foot layup is in a 35-foot three. Is a better shot. But I understand it now because you don't have the space inside and there's not a lot of bigs. Everybody's playing on the perimeter. And there, I mean, his record, we talk about Russell Westbrook maybe averaging triple-double.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he made, the record was, can anybody get to 300 threes in a season? He had 402 last year. He just shattered it.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable because, I mean, Reggie Miller was a three-point shooter. I was somewhat of a three-point shooter. You took 4 threes a game, 7 maybe.
Yeah.
Guys take 17, 18 threes
that's
a game.
Crazy. But do you like what that's doing to the game?
I like some of it, but I still think it's funny. I still think the game is played inside out. I think the closer you are, the percentages go up. But also, I posed a question the other day on social media. Will there ever be a team where the best player is a center win a championship again?
That's a very good question.
Well, the best, and he can be a Porzingis type.
Yeah.
He can be an Anthony Davis type. But I just want to see, will there ever be a team where the best player is a center, lines up at center, quote unquote, and win a championship again?
It's bad because I'd venture to say no.
I mean, you look at the teams now,
yeah.
Cleveland. I mean, I love some of these new guys. Karl Anthony Towns.
It's great.
Anthony
yeah.
Davis is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But even though can a center be the best player and win the championship again? I can't wait to see.
Yeah.
I just want to see if that will happen again.
It'll be interesting to see Anthony Davis and Boogie together.
Yes.
That's going to be fun.
And the one thing about this league is copycat league. If
yeah.
they can win two bigs, like Zach and Mark Gasol, Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, the whole league will change again.
Oh,
and
yeah.
everybody will start trying to get bigs again. Just like when Magic Johnson came out, everybody needed a 6'8 point guard when they won. Then when the Bad Boys won, everybody said, let's win by defense. Now Stephanie won a championship. Everybody said, now let's win by threes
right.
with the Cavs. So it's a copycat lead, I think.
Yeah. So I have to say this because I think we've mentioned Magic Johnson maybe 2 or 3 times now. Obviously, he went to Michigan State, so he's somebody that's, you know, your guy. What did he mean to your career? Because I know you modeled a bit after him.
Yes.
You liked that hybrid type of player.
I think growing up, you know, every kid had favorite players.
Mm-hmm.
A difference for me, and I always think Magic Johnson, we could touch and see Magic Johnson. Magic came back one day after winning the NBA Finals. Be back in the gym, be back in the community. No bodyguards, no security guards, and just around.
Yeah.
And so I was spoiled because I could touch and talk to Magic Johnson in high school. Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars, George Gervin. That era of guys where you're talking about not just good players. These are legends and super, mm-hmm. superstars. And being in the state of Michigan, having Hall of Famer George Gervin, Isaiah, Joe Dumars, Magic Johnson, just around at camps and talk to you. I remember one day I chased down Isaiah. He was on the expressway. He was going somewhere to eat at a soul food restaurant. Yeah. Stop and talk. I mean, I don't know if kids could get that type of access now. And then, fortunately, I signed with Michigan State, and you saw Irvin every year come back and play, which is totally different. And he still comes back and helps guys out with basketball, obviously, but he's a phenomenal businessman now. But just to be able to have that connection, and I think that's where, you know, obviously basketball, but also off the court, he became my mentor and a guy I looked up to because I could touch and talk to him.
Yeah, hopefully one day I'm close enough to Magic that I can call him Irvin. He's Magic to me. No, so how do you think he's going to do with the Lakers?
I think he's going to be fantastic. Yeah. We had him on NBA TV the other day, and me and Isaiah Thomas.
Nice.
He's owner of the Dodgers. I remember when he did that press conference. But when we talked about the Lakers, he just lit up.
Yeah.
He loves the Lakers. He's passionate about it. And so I think he's going to be fantastic because this is what he owns everything, obviously, everything around owning the Dodgers and everything. But this is what he really wants to do. He has a passion for basketball, and he has a passion for Lakers and the city of Los Angeles. He loves it.
That's great. I mean, I'm really excited. I remember when that news dropped, it was a frenzy. Nobody could believe that because, you know, that's what he's wanted. He obviously loves the franchise, and I think that they're now going to head into, like, a lot of the right direction, but everyone's making those jokes. You know, now Magic Johnson and Larry Bird are going to be, like, trying to make deals together.
I mean, we asked Irvin a question because when I was growing up in basketball, you saw a free agent go out to Los Angeles. Yeah, the next day he's signing.
Yeah.
They last 3 or 4 years, they can't get people to visit. Mm-hmm. It's L.A. It's the Lakers. It's just weird for the Knicks, Boston, L.A. to have down franchises. Those were like the franchises in the 90s. So seeing, having, you know, a guy like Magic back with the Lakers, I think it brings so much credibility. I think Boston's doing a good job with Danny Ainge. I think you got to have guys that connect to the culture that's been around. So I think that's the next step for the Knicks, bringing somebody else around. Not saying that Phil is gone.
Yeah.
Not saying Phil is gone, but I think they need to bring somebody, if it happens, somebody close to that culture.
What are some of the challenges you think Phil maybe encounters here that he probably didn't think that he was going to encounter once he got to New York?
Losing.
For sure.
For Phil Jackson, when's the last time he lost? Mm-hmm. And I think for him is, yes, as a general manager and president, you can pick the players and pick the coaches, but to have a daily imprint on it, he doesn't have that. And I think that's why he was so great as a coach, where he could influence the Chicago Bulls, the Los Angeles Lakers as a coach. Now, I think as a general manager, it's just been hard for him because he's never been, I would say, in this type of losing situation. And I think for Phil is, you know, he was always Phil. He handled the media totally different when he was a coach. Yeah. When he didn't feel like talking, just didn't talk.
He's still that way.
But as a president, general manager of the New York Knicks, you got to answer some of those questions. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's done that. And obviously, because that's the way he's always lived. I speak to the media when I feel like speaking to the media.
Right. Thoughts on the triangle?
It's hard. I mean, the triangle was fantastic. No matter what you run, Taylor, just like you being AI, if you got good players around you, the square would work.
It'll work somehow.
The triangle was fantastic. But I think what the triangle was great because it was man-to-man and legal defense back in our day. And you had to go with cutters. But because of zone defense, I don't really have to go with a cutter right now. I can just stand there and clog up. So I think now you need more of shooters. But the triangle can work. You put the right three, right big three, it could work. But I think more of the game is more open up pace and space now.
But I think that is sometimes my issue with the triangle is it's like, okay, if you get the right three, it'll work. It's like, so you're saying it works by design. I mean, everything can work if it works. You know, and it's like, how many times can we say, well, it'll work if this happens, and then those things don't happen?
And that's where you take your hat off to Greg Popovich. I mean, his philosophy was two bigs, 2 7-footers, David Robinson and Tim Duncan. The next thing you know, they changed the evolution of the culture. Mm-hmm. They played Tim Duncan in full round. Started to shoot a lot of threes and play fast. Now you look at there's no Tim Duncan, and now they're going through Kawhi Leonard on post-ups and a smaller guy. So their evolution of how they've changed has been phenomenal. And you look at what they've done. They've always been right there. Haven't won championships, but they've won a lot in the last two or three years. But they haven't had a total down period as a franchise. I mean, they won 67 games last year.
Yeah.
And this year, they're in the second best overall. You lose a Tim Duncan. Tony Parker's been beat up. Manu Ginobili are older.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have the second best record in all of basketball.
Consistency.
And two games as of right now, today we're speaking, out of first place in the West.
That's insane.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is.
But
they
go quietly under the radar.
But, you know, you played for the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that experience.
It's totally different. It's a pass. They call it good to great shot. You have a good shot, but if you can pass it, get a great shot. Defensively, you're all on a string. And then more importantly, the family atmosphere.
Yeah.
You do everything together. And I think it pays off. And then you have some great players, obviously. But I think also you have some players that buy into their role. And that's hard to do with professional players, to buy into their role when they think their role is something different. Mm-hmm. But I think their leadership comes from Pop, Tim Duncan, all the leaders.
Yeah.
Because if Pop's unselfish, Tim Duncan's unselfish, everybody else has to be unselfish.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last couple things for you. First thing, I'm a big fan of like vintage throwback jerseys. Love them. And obviously you play for the Hawks. I'm from Gwinnett County, so I like the Atlanta Hawks. And you played with the bird. You had the illustrations. Yes. Should we bring those back? I say yes. Some of them are so, like the Raptor. I love that. Like a Vince Carter. Like I love it. I think those should come back.
I think some of my old favorites, just my hometown of Detroit.
Okay.
The old English D with the Tigers. Sweet Lou Whitaker. You're too young for that, Taylor.
I've seen it, though.
Barry Sanders.
Yes.
I think for Atlanta, you know, I loved our Hawk. You know, I guess I'm biased.
Yeah.
But my favorite was the Deion Sanders Black Falcon jersey.
That's don't get favorite. Me started. I have the Vic all black.
Great.
But I need the Deion all black.
You need the Deion all black.
Yes.
And I think another one for me, let me think. The Denver Nugget with all the colors.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. Some saw, you know, a lot of it. Walter Payton.
Yeah.
The Chicago Bear.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm down with that. That was a great 30 for 30 as well, by the way.
It was.
Very, very good 30 for 30. Okay, so Twitter questions now. You've got a couple. All right. Brendan wants to know, did you like the Omni or Phillips Moore? Or any good stories about the Omni?
Brendan, great question. And this is professional basketball, the business of basketball. We were planning Omni, and they came to me and said, we're building Phillips. Oh, I went out in the community and did everything to promote it, getting a chance to talk about it. Then last year, we couldn't even play in the Omni. We had to play at Georgia Tech and the Georgia Dome.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Looking forward to it, looking at the lockers, and I'm traded before I got a chance to play in the Phillips. So to his question, my answer is
no.
I love the Omni way more than Phillips Arena because I didn't get a chance to play in it.
Yeah, it's a symbol of what I never got to do.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, Brendan had a very good question.
Very good question.
Very good question. Okay, how did you develop the fake spin dribble move? This is a question from Jack.
They call it the Smitty, and it started off
kid,
and I wouldn't call him a kid. He was older than me, a guy named Richard Dowles in my recreation center. It's kind of where you line up, you're halfway at a guy, and you jump up, and you fake span, and we call it the Smitty. And so it's so funny. It's lived on today.
And I'll see people be like, they're doing the Smitty, and tweet
Jokic
you.
Jokic is doing it. Chris Paul, the younger Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
So many guys are doing the Smitty right now. And so it's fun to see. I have my own signature move and guys still doing it even when I started back in 84, 85.
I love it. Okay, Taj, who was your favorite teammate and why?
So many. I tell people if I could put the players that I played with, not just skill level, the most phenomenal player off the court I played with is David Robinson.
Okay.
A guy that's just unbelievable smart, unbelievable individually. Then I played with Grant Long, one of my favorite teammates. Rasheed Wallace, and I think if you can take a Twitter poll.
So cool.
People love to say they played with Rasheed Wallace. Mookie Blaylock, the list goes on and on. I played with Scottie Pippen. I played with so many. I would say probably my favorite is my guy with his finger wagging, no. Dikembe Mutombo. Yes. Reason why, we were in the same draft, 91. Mm-hmm. We both signed a free agent contract with the Hawks on the same day.
Okay.
We got married on the same day.
Really?
We got off the plane, the honeymoon, at the same place.
No.
Our wives' birthday are one day apart. So we got this thing, and then we live.
It's meant to be.
About two blocks from each other in Atlanta. So Dikembe, at times, he's my favorite teammate, not my favorite neighbor.
That's so funny. I can't believe all those, like,
all
coincidences.
Yes.
That's insane. I love that. I need a friend like Dikembe. Okay, last Twitter question. This is from, I think his name is Les. Hopefully I got that right. He wants to know why you and Derek Coleman didn't go to the same college.
Yeah, great question. Mm-hmm. Me, Derek Coleman, Doug Smith, Anderson Hunt, we were all thinking about going to school in Michigan. But then I think when you look at it, Derek left and went to Syracuse. Doug went to Missouri. Anderson Hunt went to UNLV.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Alexander went to Iowa State. I was left. I was like, I wasn't going to that school, Michigan, at all.
Yeah.
And Michigan State is where I wanted to go. But I just always thought about if we all would have played together at the same college.
Mm-hmm.
We all play AAU for 2 years. We only lost one game in 2 years.
What could have been?
What could have been?
What could have been? We'll never know. We'll never know. But I do want to leave with this because I think it's very important. Of course, 1 year you won the Manny Jackson Human Spirit Award because you are very into charitable efforts. You give a lot back to Michigan State. Tell me why that's so important to you.
It originated from my parents, watching my mom. I tell you the crazy story. I always tell it. I was young, and I had one brother, one sister. But I was like 7 or 8, and it'd be like 10, 12 people come to the house, and they'd be like, Mom, Mom, Mom. And I'm like, whoa, what is going on? I need 30 people with Mom, but she did so much for the community at the church. So that's where I got it from, my dad. You know, my dad would go build basketball courts around the city for people in my backyard, and we had like the neighborhood place where everybody played. So for my dad and my mom, that's where it originated. And then obviously I got a chance to build a student academic center in my mom's name. After she passed. In 1998, it opened.
Oh, that's great.
Two-story building on Michigan State campus, 31,000 square feet. And the one good thing, just some of the stats from 1998 to 2016. Just want to read some of them to you guys because
yes,
I'm very, very,
do.
Very, very proud.
You should be.
We have 448 student athletes that have a grade point average over a 3.0 now. For Phil Jackson, when's the last time he lost?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for him is, yes, as a general manager and president, you can pick the players and pick the coaches, but to have a daily imprint on it, he doesn't have that. And I think that's why he was so great as a coach, where he could influence the Chicago Bulls or Los Angeles Lakers as a coach. Now, I think as a general manager, it's just been hard for him because he's never been, I would say, in this type of losing situation. And I think for Phil is, you know, he was always Phil. He handled the media totally different when he was a coach.
Yeah.
When he didn't feel like talking, just didn't talk.
Oh, but, he's still that way.
But as a president, general manager of the New York Knicks, you got to answer some of those questions. I don't think he's done that. And
right.
Obviously, because that's the way he's always lived. I speak to the media when I feel like speaking to the media.
Right.
John Green, Mateen Cleese, we all come back. I think if you look at just the last time we were in the Final Four,
mm-hmm.
2 years ago, I think over 200 former players came back for the Final Four.
Yeah.
And Tom was asking more and more guys to find as many guys to come back, and he does that. And I think that's why I love Michigan State University, because it's not just about basketball. It's about the community. It's about, I have a scholarship program that goes back to Reach Back to give kids in Detroit to come to Michigan State on a four-year ride. Draymond Green just donated. At the time when I donated, mm-hmm. it was the largest gift back to a university. By
Draymond an beat you out a little bit.
And Draymond wants to give an extra $100,000 so he can make sure he wins. So, which I'm very proud of. I think when you start to look at it is just to see him from high school, mm-hmm. his career, and him getting a chance to give back. That's what we do. We call ourselves Spartan Dogs, as
Good.
You know, in
yes,
the Big Ten.
Yes.
We have such a great connection. guys keep in touch, guys root for each other. So it's our community more than just basketball. It's just our community.
Nice. I love how you're like, last time we were in the Final Four, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Must be nice.
It's like Final Four bust for us.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, must be nice. We need to make the tournament first. Illinois is going to get it together.
When I played, Illinois was...
Oh, we were bombed.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. We were bombed.
You're talking about, there was like Kentucky-type talent.
Yes.
Every year, night in, night out.
Yeah, we had Flying Illini, yes. And then after that, we had, of course, like the 05 team that made it to the championship. Should have beat North Carolina. It didn't work out. Oh, well, maybe we'll get there eventually, but I cannot let you leave without telling me. You have to pick this year, pick a Final Four and a winner.
Whew. I always have Michigan State in there because, you know, sometimes we call it January, February.
Izzo.
Yeah, you see, she's on fast. She worked at the Big Ten. So you never can count him out.
Yes.
And it seems like when he's having a down year, this is the year.
Yeah.
And then after that,
he's just setting up for Final Four.
Kansas.
Okay.
I liked where they're going. Josh Jackson, the kid from Detroit, playing unbelievable well. He would have played better if he chose Michigan State. But he went to Kansas. Then I got a feeling with Villanova. Jay Wright, when you have great guards and great coach, and you have these upperclassmen that are back, they've been there. They've done that. Some kind of reason, I'm going Arizona, North Carolina. I'm going to tip my hat to Arizona. That'll be my Final Four.
Winner. Who's the champ?
Michigan State plays Villanova.
Okay. You're not going to say that in Michigan?
Michigan State wins. Easy answer.
Hey, I hope it works out for you.
Good.
Happy March. Happy Izzo Month. And thank you for joining the podcast. You were splendid.
Thank you, Taylor. Appreciate you.
Thank you to Steve Smith. He was a pleasure, as always. My favorite part is probably when you talked about AI. I think that if I go out and work on my crossover, I may be able to get it down. I'll work on the Euro step a little bit later. Make sure to subscribe to Time Out with Taylor Rooks by searching for the show in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. And once you subscribe, rate and review. I'm going to look for those. See you later.